Colonel Hutchison, Real 6. Now, during this period, there was a policy of introducing desert veterans. Desert veterans into the unit at officer level, and one of the rather more controversial elements of it was that Major Nairn of C Squadron was replaced by Major Nichols. And this has caused some comment since. I wonder, were you aware of the background? Why was Major Nairn removed, and what do you think of Major Nichols, his replacement?
Well, I think Colonel Scott had the unusual job of being told that one of his squadron leaders, and presumably that would mean not headquarters squadron, one of the three squadron leaders, had to be replaced by somebody with a desert experience, because that was government policy. And so he had to select somebody, he selected Major Nairn, who certainly is still alive. Did you see him?
I haven't seen him yet, no. Was there any bad blood between Major Nairn and the Colonel? Colonel Scott,
would
you
say? Not aware of, but I'm bound to say that probably Colonel Scott could find both John Gilmore and John Pearl probably easier to get on with than Major Nairn, who was perhaps a shyer man, and I think he might have been reasoned that way. I don't know. Obviously, it was not a nice selection to have to make.
Now, what about Major Nichols? He wasn't with you that long because he was killed. But what was he like in the
He was a yeoman. Staffordshire Yeomanry, I think. Yes, Staffordshire Yeomanry, because Major Nairn took over his squadron. And they were in the Independent Armoured Brigade.
Do you think Major Nichols, he had desert experience. Do you think this desert experience gave anything to the unit? I mean, was it a valid policy of introducing desert veterans, or did it not make much difference as far as you were concerned?
Well, you see, what other experience had we got? It was only in North Africa, wasn't it? And so a battle experience, and so it had to be either desert or North Africa anyway.
But was it useful to you? You know, his insights.
I think it was. If only that he had battle experience, which we had none of.
Now, the next thing is to move to Warburg Barracks at Aldershot. And one of the main things there was the waterproofing programme that people talk about.
Yes.
Were you aware of, I mean, what could you explain how, the importance of it and how they went about it? Or were you not direct?
It was utterly unimportant, I think, because by the time that we landed, we landed over open beaches. I personally landed at low tide. I think we waited for the tide to go right out and just waddled onto the beach down the ramp of the landing ship tank that I crossed in, which a good many of us did. But I suppose it was an important provision, because they were to know whether one will be able to do that, whether it will be under fire and whether you might have to land into quite deep water. But the funny thing is that, as far as I'm aware, nobody had to wade into a water. The only person that did was the wretched padre, who had a little buzz box, and that got waterlogged because it was incapable of being waterproofed. But we waterproofed the tanks and spent quite a lot of time doing this and being taught how to do it. We did it personally.
Would you help your crew, or would you just direct them?
Yes, we did it all together. There was quite a lot of work involved, but it meant that, in theory, you could way ashore up to sort of turret level, I think, but the necessity didn't arise.
Did they?
Were, in any case, as far as we were concerned. Did I mean, on D-Day, yes.
Did you test it?
Hmm?
Did you test the waterproofing?
Yes. I can't remember where. I think we drove it into ponds somewhere.
Anything else about Aldershot? You were there about 3 months, but I mean, nothing, people don't seem to talk about much other than the waterproofing. Is there anything you recall from that period?
No. Of course, there's one thing that you have not asked about. And during that spring, late winter, early spring, we were equipped with one tank per troop of, with these 17-pounder guns, which was really quite a decent gun and was just about a match for a Panther's long barrel 75.
Now, these were the Firefly Sherman, weren't
they? That's right. And so we had to learn to use those, and I think we all went up to ranges in Cumbria. Walkup, is it called? W-A-R-C-O-P, Walkup ranges, and we fired these fireflies. So everyone that was going to be involved with a firefly gun had the opportunity of firing it.
What did you think of the Firefly? I mean, as a tank, you know, was it better? Were there any disadvantages?
I can't speak personally, but the fact that the gun was a more useful weapon than the 75 must have given the crews a greater feeling of confidence.
Anything else before you left Aldershot? Because that's when you start moving overseas, in a sense.
Yes, we weren't there very long. We went down, I think, in April, didn't we?
And then March or April, yeah.
I remember watching the... I suppose it was the 6th Armoured Division being flown over the night before...
Do you mean airborne?
The 6th Airborne was flown over on the evening of the 5th of June. This was getting in the early evening.
Did you realise it was D-Day? I mean, had you been briefed?
I think we did. We didn't move. I don't know when we left Aldershot, but until a couple of days afterwards, and we sadly didn't cross over to France until, I think it was about a week afterwards.
I think around about the 15th of June, you know, 16th, 17th of June.
Exactly on the same day.
What happened in the interim period, between D-Day and when you went across? What was the regiment doing, or parts of the regiment doing?
Well, I don't think we left Aldershot until a couple of days after D-Day. And then we just motored down to a staging camp in woods near Portsmouth, from where we loaded onto the cross-channel vessels.
And what about the loading of the landing ship tanks? Was it a complicated procedure getting them all aboard in the right place?
Yes, and they were very much mixed cargoes, if that's the right way to describe it. I rather think the vessel I went over on was certainly a landing ship tank. I'm not sure that it didn't have an American crew. Anyway, it had quite good comforts in the form of liberal supplies of fruit juice and that sort of thing. And we went over, of course, I think overnight, but didn't, but landed in daylight.
What was the crossing like? Do you have any memory of it?
No, absolutely none. It was calm, and there was no discomfort. I mean, on D-Day, on these smaller vessels, it was really very unpleasant. A lot of people were pretty seasick, I think, but not in my case.
And what about the landing? What do you remember? What could you see as you came off the landship tank? You landed at Courcelles, I think.
It was about the 12th. Yes,
15th, right about the 15th.
After D-Day. I don't know where we landed, but I think that I landed somewhere near Alamance. But I don't know. No one knew exactly where. The tide was out. By that time, the beaches themselves were being cleared of obstructions, and the approaches from the beach, minefields were being, the routes taped through minefields, so that one literally drove off the beach and up the bank on the other side, and onto a cross-country track, and then onto a road, I suppose. And we were just told where we were to concentrate.
Now that seems to have been the village of Cully.
That's right. It's very near the, on the north side of the small village. The north side of the Bayard-Pont Road. I drove into the outskirts of Bayard and then turned left, so to speak, on that road and motored along it until we got near Cully. There was no problem, I don't think, about concentrating there. And when we got there, we had areas allotted to each squadron to concentrate in. I suppose there were advance parties there to tell you where to go. I just don't remember.
It was just basically a field, wasn't it?
It wasn't really a village so much as a hamlet, rather scattered hamlet, Cully, as I recall. But with hedges and orchards and quite good places to get concealed, you know, and camouflage.
Now, there's some general questions which we sort of ask about this time, because it's a good, you know, there's no fighting going on, so it's quite a good place to sort of start asking. Well, what about camouflage arrangements? You know, when you were going to take up a position, what did you have to camouflage your tank? Would you use netting or scrim or...?
Yes, we had, but I think that latterly we used to use, you know, cut branches off and... depending on the country and what was available, and you use that for camouflage, because you have a knitting too, which you put over. But I think we got, more sophisticated in our approach to camouflage, which was not so important.
And what about the bivouacs? They seem to have had a bivouac arrangement which hung off the side of a tank What could you explain what that was like? And would you, as an officer, go in with your men in that, or did you dig a trench under the tank, or did you just sleep in the tank?
Well,
in these early days.
Bivouac is all right if you're right out of action. But if you're in action and you concentrate the night, you still could be very vulnerable to shell fire. You either dug a trench. To sleep in, or slept in the tank. I seem to remember more sleeping, all five of us inside the tank, and one was down tired, probably, particularly in those summer months when it's a short night.
But at Cully, you'd probably be in bivouacs because you're out of action.
Probably did. There was no question about being shelled, whether we were within range. I think probably just out.
Now, what equipment, extra equipment, would you have on your tank in those early days? We might sort of have a look at what you started picking up during the campaign. But what would you carry on the... Because the great thing about tanks is you can carry things with you. And what would you have on your tank in those first days?
I could have some blankets and things like that. And food, of course. We were living throughout the campaign on those comfort rations, of which there were about half a dozen different combinations.
What were they like?
They were supposed to be 14 men for a day. We tended to be... Food wasn't a problem. At any stage during the campaign, we tended to have more than we needed. In fact, I found myself very often feeding infantry who'd not got food.
And what would you get with a compo food ration? If you got a pack, what would be in one, if you remember?
Well, there were various things. You had various sort of tinned meats and tinned puddings and tinned cheese and biscuits and butter and cigarettes. A few sweets, I think, even. And tea, a mixture of tea, sugar, and condensed milk, and milk, dried milk. And of course, we had your little petrol cooker on each tank. So the generally, the job of the spare driver was to look after cooking.
What was the food like he'd prepare for you? What was it like? I mean, was it good enough?
Oh, it's all right. It's all right. Some of the packs were better than others. Some of them were more popular than others. They were all right. They were far superior to... and biscuits, I suppose. But you did miss bread. I remember they started setting up few bakeries at some stage. I don't remember when. In Normandy, anyway. Before we broke out of Normandy, we got bread. And it was... really quite an event to get a loaf of bread. It might be a bit stale.
What about cigarettes? Did you smoke?
Yes.
Was there...
Well, forbidden smoke in tanks. But needless to say, as soon as you got overseas, you smoked. I smoked heavily.
Had you smoked before you joined the army?
Yes. But I smoked... I smoked a pipe. Or I smoked... tended to smoke, I think, Turkish cigarettes. Except that I did. But as soon as the war got going, I smoked... Player's Navy Cut, I think, in large quantities.
Did it? You find it helped your nerves, or did you...
I did. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done it.
What about just some other general things? I think it's almost time to have a look at the people who are in your crew. You may not remember their names, but we have your 8th Squadron diary, and I'll just quote you some of the names in your crew. On the 26th of June, which is the first time we went into action, you were with Trooper Perry, Trooper Benyon, Trooper Dines, and Lance Corporal Gourlay. And I wonder, do you remember these men?
Yes, I do. I remember them all.
What were they like? I mean, Trooper Perry, what was he?
Really, I've known him least well, and I don't know what happened to him, but he didn't remain a member of my crew for very long, nor did Benyon.
What did they do? Were they your drivers, or...?
I don't remember whether they became casualties or sick.
I just wonder what they did in the crew.
Tom Dines was my gunner, and he remained my gunner until the end of the war.
Right, well, let's concentrate on him. What was Tom Dines? What was he like? He was
he's a nice boy. It came from Dagenham. But I've never been in touch with him since the war. I don't know when Tom died. He obviously wasn't in the regiment at the beginning of the war, being an Englishman. But he's been with us for some time. Godley.
What was he?
He was my driver. I had to sack him after about the... second battle, he lost his nerve.
We'll perhaps come on to that. The other two, so Bennion, and which was your wireless operator, Perry or Bennion, or do you not remember now?
Alec Perry became my wireless operator, and at what stage now did he? Goodwood. Bennion, I see, was still there, and Gorley was still there.
And then
Perry finished up as a sergeant, and he became bank manager, and he's been up here lunching with me, Alec. I tried to get him up last year. Don't think he's awfully well now. Anyway, he didn't come last year. I haven't seen him for a year or two, but he's splendid.
He's a good wireless operator. Mm-hmm. A good wireless operator. And your co-driver...
He controlled the squadron as far as the wireless was concerned. And they'd, the wireless discipline was pretty good. And he was a contributory factor.
So your co-driver was Bennion?
Yes.
Oh, you don't remember much?
No, I don't remember much. He was all right.
Were you close to this crew? I mean, it's your first crew in action. Obviously you had a problem with Gourlay, which we'll come to, but were they what you'd call a good crew?
Yes. I like Gourlay. When I did part of it, it was sometime after Goodwood, I think. I'm sure it is, and I've not got the records of crews after the first. I only got crew commanders.
I
think it was sometime after that, about the time that we broke out, I had to change him. And then another of the Corporal Aitken, who was a yeoman, and was in a Scotland headquarters troop. He drove me until the end of the war.
I'll come back to him then. Now, how did you get on with your crew on a personal level? I mean, would they call you Major, or would they call you by your name, or what? How informal was it? Because you were all living together in a small.
They called me Sir, and they referred to me as Pinky, which is what I was. That didn't come from the army. Well, it didn't. But we were stationed out in Ireland. The daughter of the house was she started calling me Pink as a fresh-faced young man. And so that became my regimental name. And people from the general downwards would call me Pink into my face. But the men didn't know. But they referred to me as Pink, yes.
Did you mind the nickname?
No.
So there was a certain formality, but did you chat with them as men, or was it always officer men? Did you see what I mean? Did you always preserve the a level between you, or would you just sometimes chat?
Well, we got on all very well, I think. I'm sure, but I think that I think one has to apply, and one did apply, whether right or wrong, a certain reserve to the others, but I have my relations with all of them, latterly, the same crew for a long, long time were pretty good. I enjoyed their captain. I like to think they enjoyed mine. It was when they lived together, of course, all the time.
Now, I think we'll now move on to the opening actions, which is called Epsom, normally, Operation Epsom, which is a series of attacks on Sher, and then followed on with the crossing of the Odon and Hill, what's the name, Hill 101.
112,
that's right. if we start with the briefing for the first battle, which is where your A Squadron diary starts, which we'll discuss later how you came to write it, and which we have a copy of in the War Museum now. What form? I don't expect you to know the details of the briefing, and it's written out here anyway. But how was a briefing done? Would it be done by Colonel Scott, or would it be done by Pole or Major Pole, or how exactly was the briefing organised?
Colonel Scott would brief his squadron leaders, and the squadron leaders would then brief their officers, who would then brief their troops. And that was invariable. And when we were in the middle of a battle, we tended to leaguer at night, because that was the simplest way of lorries coming up.
I'll come back to that, because that's how the first day finished. So you would get your first briefing. Do you remember anything about your briefing for your first action? And
the idea sounded pretty ambitious. Of course, we were not only to get across the Odon, but we'd go on and get across the Orme, somewhere near Torre Harcourt, I think. But of course, we never smelt that. But the whole impression of the first operation, which went on for several days, May, was one of them. Disappointment, I think.
Do you remember the first day's action? Quite a few people remember the first day.
I wasn't involved in shooting or being very much shot at the first day. A squadron was in reserve to begin with, and then we went round the outside, the north of Shah, and the leading troop lost two tanks. Donald Hall. And we got finally sort of held up there. And then it came on to very heavy rain. It was a thoroughly unpleasant evening. Sure, it was in a hell of a mess. Burning tanks and houses. And one thing I can remember particularly was driving around the north of it and going over a nasty bump of some sort. And I had a bottle of whiskey, which I'd stowed for emergency purposes at the back of the radio, at the back of the turret. God, this bloody thing got me out of my lodge. I crashed onto the floor, and I knew only too well what had happened. And that was the most disastrous. Lost my bottle of whiskey.
But your tank was fairly clear of action in that first day.
I know about a shot the first day.
Now, the Odon